Yep, yep. Welcome back to the Lars Resort. Another episode. A two-episode week. Still a podcast, though, with me, Lars Everson, brought to you by Betsson. It is a baffling thing that it turns out that when I am technically on holiday, I suddenly become more productive. That's usually not how these things are meant to go. But I think there's also an element of me being really hyped to have Peter here with me. So I want to make more content while we can. You have to make hay while the sun is shining.
I'm a really good influence on him.
He is, actually. I mean, being a very good house guest. I mean, Peter is one of those early risers, early to bed, early to get up in the morning. Which, I mean, without divulging too much personal information, I'm very much not. But I have... Can you just confirm to the listeners, Peter, that I have, you know, I've applied myself and assimilated well into the Welton household?
Yeah, you've been a fantastic house guest. I have no concerns or annoyances about you in any way, shape, or form. Although you have this thing about closing all the doors,
yeah,
when you leave a room, which is a weird thing for us as a family, and I go around and reopen all the doors, but that's it's a minor quibble.
It's just all those years living in England and the sort of leaky old houses and expensive heating bills and stuff that realistically you're not going to heat an entire house, so you just kind of pick a couple of rooms that you try to keep warm, and then you absolutely cannot leave those doors open because that heat will dissipate. Well, of course, here
airflow is
very much here is the opposite. We want the air to move around.
So yeah, airflow is a big deal here.
But then again, I feel like if after a couple of days, airflow is the biggest concern. So far, the house visit will have gone well. Like I haven't like vomited on anyone or like clogged up the toilets or like left drug paraphernalia lying around. Like this is generally speaking, this has gone quite well.
It's like the White House, some bag of cocaine left on a countertop somewhere.
Wait, they have that in the White House?
Yeah.
This is a crazy country, man.
The White House and the Playboy Mansion are really just the same thing on opposite coasts, I believe.
What a wild setup that is. And that brings us neatly on to the Champions League draw.
That's such a professional segue.
Yeah, one of us is a radio professional with many decades of experience. The other one is a Norwegian goofball.
I love it. I love goofballs.
Yeah.
Of any nationality.
The Champions League draw happened, and a lot of people felt this round of fixtures wasn't amazing.
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
How did it feel to wake up and see the draw?
No, all that stuff
versus
is confusing.
Actually getting to watch it.
Yeah, the time difference stuff is really confusing. I don't mind sort of midweek games being in the afternoon rather than the evening.
It's kind of cool.
I don't like that. I don't hate that. And I can imagine if you're in this time zone, as long as you get your work done in time to watch it, that should work well.
Now, because you got to watch the other day Champions League, how do you like the presentation here in the States where they offer us the ability to watch two games at the same time side by side?
You're really just fishing for compliments here,
aren't
you?
Do you have that over there?
No, well, not to my knowledge. But the streaming service over in the US basically lets you put, when there's two simultaneous games, just have the both of them on the screen, like right next to each other, and then they flip the sound from one to the other depending on whether something interesting is happening.
That's kind of cool.
And I certainly think if you have a very big television, or as is the case with you, a massive projector, I guess all projectors are really the same size. It kind of depends where you put the canvas and stuff.
Maybe projectors come in different shapes and sizes, and they're capable of projecting different size screens.
Point being, Peter is not so much watching football on a screen, he's watching football on an entire wall. And in that sort of context, having two games up on the thing really works. I enjoyed that. But I also think it was good that we had genuinely exciting games, that we had a game go to extra time. I obviously missed it, but we had a game go to penalties, because there was a week where the Man City Copenhagen game was a bit of a mismatch, Bayern Lazio was a bit of a mismatch, and people were sort of grumbling, what if the Champions League is now actually bad?
Mm-hmm. I asked you this question, like, is there a sense that maybe the thrill is gone?
Well, it's not completely gone. I would agree that there is a problem of a small group of clubs kind of pulling away from the rest of the field a little bit. I wonder if we might have even had this conversation on this podcast. We don't need to do it again. But I was very glad in that context to have a really thrilling, like, Dortmund PSV was exciting. The Atleti Inter game was exciting. To have a proper sort of Champions League night, or in our case, afternoon, that was very timely, I thought. And it brings us to the draw, which I think this is where it gets juicy, because I don't think any of these matchups are one-sided, really.
No.
And I'm gonna head straight to the Betson website and check. So I'm going to furnish this conversation with odds, because I think that will kind of... I think you'll be intrigued.
Odds brought to you by Betson.
Of course. And who do you think are the biggest favorites out of the field? Like, we have the four ties in front of us.
It's got to be City.
Yeah. You're exactly right. And that's... And it's a surprise, I guess, that the team playing Real Madrid is the biggest favorite to cast through.
Yeah, that's...
when you think of it that way. But that is just where we are with City. And I guess we had this chat when we had the sort of is the Champions League bad possibly thing. It is. It feels like it is turning into a discussion of not who can win it, but who could feasibly beat City. And the number of teams who could feasibly beat City feels like it's kind of starting to get quite small. And Real Madrid has always been, throughout the season, it's looked like City and Real Madrid are probably the two best teams in Europe, with Arsenal being pretty close there, and Liverpool being very good, but not in the competition. But now that they get drawn together, you know, the City are 150 to progress from the tie, Real Madrid are 265 with Betson, and that's so City clear favourites, and rightly so, I think.
I do. I've been sitting here thinking about this since the draw came out, and I'm trying to think of other variations of this that could have resulted.
Mm.
But in many ways, I think this is interesting. I mean, look, it's a bummer that we're not going to get a Real Madrid City final. Mm. That's over. I also think it's a bummer that the two English clubs are on the same side of the bracket. Like, the fact that we won't get a Premier League final, but we could have a La Liga final.
Yeah. No, and that brings me to the point, which I think is interesting. I think there's a case to be made that the four best teams are on the same side of the bracket.
Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of weird how that played out. But at the same time, I also get a sense that this is seeded interestingly because... arguably the two weakest teams are playing each other.
Yeah.
The next two tier teams are playing each other. The next two tier teams on top of that are playing each other.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, it's an interesting way that it all played out.
Very interesting.
I'm not sure that if we had our druthers about how we would rather have the quarterfinals, like if you had said, Laura, if you got to pick the quarterfinals, would you have picked this?
No, just...
they just gave you a crown.
No, just for
scepter.
For coefficient reasons, I would have had Arsenal on the other side of it to make it more likely that we get an all-English final, because we're all coefficient ultras at the moment, especially Tottenham fans. Right. We're big on the coefficient right now. And I should say that when I say it's felt like City and Real Madrid are the two best teams in this competition, and that Real Madrid are the most likely to stop City. I hear a few, all five Arsenal fans who listen to this podcast object vociferously in the background, going, "Hey, what about us? We're actually above City in the table. Come on, take us." And I would say that that's always been the sort of. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Arsenal went and won this tournament, and I think they have a really good chance against Bayern. With the bookmakers, they are slight favorites to progress against Bayern. They're 186. Bayern are exactly two, so exactly even.
But
so,
it's Harry Kane versus Arsenal. How awesome is that?
Yeah, that's really cool. But you can say that that's narrative wise, it's amazing. But I think just competitively, it's also like Eric Dier against Bukayo Saka and the lads up front.
Very fair point.
I think that's why Arsenal are favorites here. In a straight swap, I think you'd probably have the Bayern attack just about ahead of the Arsenal attack. But my God, you would so much rather have everything that's happening further back on the pitch for the Arsenal. And the whole thing about Arsenal this season is that they've been so good defensively. I don't have the XG in front of me, but I'm 99% certain they have the lowest XG conceded in the Premier League this season. They've been the best defense in the Premier League, and they're coming up a Bayern team that can definitely attack, but are so vulnerable down the other end. So I quite like Arsenal to get through. In fact, I think that price, 186 on Arsenal to progress, is kind of worth picking up, to be honest. Even after the Porto game, where clearly Arsenal had a bit of a wobble, but this is going to be such a different encounter, because we talked about it in the last episode. Porto are a really niggly, scrappy, well-structured, you know, battly team that kind of managed to shut down Arsenal's production. Bayern are the opposite. Like, Bayern are pretty scary going forward, but they are not reliable at the back at all. And I think Arsenal will just pick them apart. That should be an exciting tie. I think we'll have goals here. And Harry Kane rocking up at the Emirates and getting some goals, that can definitely happen. I could easily see Arsenal scoring quite a few goals over these two ties. I think that's the problem for Bayern here.
It does look like a good one. I'm pretty excited about this. Although, not to completely derail your podcast, I'm distracted by this graphic that the American streamer has provided of the bracket. Have you noticed that for each of the teams, what they've done is they've put the club crest and a photo of the star of a star player from each team to represent that team.
Yeah.
But all of the players look like they're about to angrily eat a piece of pizza.
Hmm.
The way that, because they're all captured shouting.
Shouting, yeah. Because this shows passion.
But there's no context, so they don't look like they're shouting. They look like they're about to eat something in a very angry state.
Yeah.
It's just a weird graphic.
Yeah, no, that is a weird graphic. You should retweet that from your radio account.
How about I send it to you and you retweet it?
Maybe
to
not.
To your listener.
But possibly not.
Speaking just of, edit that part out. I'm sorry.
I'll keep it in. We'll see what we do.
I mean, look how hungry Martin Odegaard looks. He looks like he's really mad that nobody's given him some food.
And he's a very skinny boy. He probably spends a lot of time being hungry. All these guys, they're very skinny these days, footballers. Maybe this is just me going on like the Texas diet for a couple of days and thinking this is a normal amount of food.
Would you like to talk about all the food you've had?
I mean,
so far?
It's 2 days in a row now. You've presented me with food that was obviously delicious, but also made me feel like I may never have to eat again. And My much publicized dieting efforts over the last 6 months would not have worked if I lived in this state. Like, I would not have been able to keep any kind of shape here. And I don't know how you do it, sir.
So, let's see. You're on, like, day 3.5. What's the food highlight so far?
Speaking about derailing the podcast, I think the barbecue probably is the favorite so far. Right. Yeah, I'd say so. But, like, moving swiftly on... From highlights,
you're
of
never
the,
gonna have me back in the resort.
Of course, might do one more while I'm still here. Can never have enough of this.
Okay.
I think PSG Barcelona is a really fascinating matchup because Barcelona have had their issues in La Liga and are a pretty flawed team. But then again, PSG have this sort of incredible ability to stuff things up in this tournament. But I do think they are a slightly different proposition now. They have kind of shunned, they've gotten rid of the sort of all Galacticos all the time type of thing. And it is now Kylian Mbappe, who's kind of ably supported by a much younger, much more athletic cast of players around him. And in terms of like absolute quality, they're probably weaker. I mean, they're definitely weaker than the team that got to the final under Tuchel. But I just wonder if the balance is slightly better and that the young guys he has around him now gives Mbappe a better platform to do his stuff, and they're more likely to be able to keep opponents at bay whilst Mbappe just kind of destroys whoever he comes up against.
May I submit to you that of the four ties, this is the one that, because of the changes in these teams and kind of their weird state of flux they're in, this may be the least... glamorous in some ways, listen to what I'm saying. Normally, you'd say PSG and Barcelona is a massively appealing tie.
Mm.
But because of the current state both of these teams are in, it's not at their same volume. But I also think at the same time, this probably will end up being the most exciting of the draw of the ties.
It could. I do track your logic. But I think, like, with the best will in the world, this is still significantly more glamorous than Atleti Dortmund.
Okay, but I think people are really fast. Okay, all right.
Fair enough.
Okay. I just think that the shine of PSG and Barcelona are, for those two clubs, at low ebb.
That's certainly true.
And so when you normally would be super excited about this, maybe you're distracted by these other ties. And I just have a feeling of the four ties, this is going to be the one at the end of two legs. We're going to go, man, that was explosive fun.
Yeah, no, that I concur with.
Okay,
and I think
maybe that's the point I'm trying to make.
And I think, yeah, explosive fun. You know, imperfect teams often make for more fun games. Like, I mean, if a yes. team is completely settled and has an 11 that really works and all parts of the team is working, that's often not the most fun thing to watch. You want the teams to be a little bit flawed. And I actually think in terms of entertainment value, I definitely think that could be a very, very good tie. And I could be wrong, but I think it's also a little bit obvious that Atleti Dortmund is the one that's going to be probably not that much fun, because Atleti and Dortmund are so much less swashbuckling than they previously have been really quite underwhelming in the Bundesliga this season, and have done very, very well to get this far. And that's the one where, yeah, in a star-studded cast, those are definitely that's the tie that's probably the least interesting. Not uninteresting, but the least interesting, I'd say.
But doesn't the way this set up almost, like, scream set up in a like a dream state for Atleti?
Yeah, it does, I think.
Because all they got to do is beat Dortmund, and then they get PSG or Barcelona after that.
Who are a team that's kind of, yeah, and frustrating, is sort of still pretty star-studded, but flawed and imperfect. PSG or Barcelona mm-hmm. is kind of, that's meat and drink for Diego Simeone. So maybe because I haven't said it this year, so many seasons I've sort of made the case saying, ooh, Atleti, they could surprise everyone and annoy their way to a final in the Champions League, and it just hasn't come off. And I haven't said it at any point this season, so maybe this is the season that actually happens.
There you go.
I don't know, but it is an exciting draw. Atleti are clear favorites, I should say. 174 with bets on Dortmund.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, Dortmund at 214. Mm-hmm. Dortmund really haven't been very good this season, and getting past PSV is. Yeah, narrowly getting past PSV in the end is not a hugely impressive calling card. And whatever flaws Atleti have, I think they're a significantly better team than this iteration of Borussia Dortmund. So I definitely think that is fully justified. That's the Champions League draw. I'm excited. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay. Oh, no.
I've taken more of a presenter role than I usually do, haven't I? Well, what's the final going to be, Peter Welpton?
What will the final be? Oh, I think it... I'm just off the top of my head, just looking at this, it's going to be City and Atletico Madrid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good shout. I think City-PSG, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I think Mbappe, as much as he annoys me a little bit sometimes, he is remarkable, and I think he'll find a way to get goals against Atleti. And
assuming they don't take him off at halftime.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. And I think he's sort of, for all the noise around him and his situation and everything, over 90 minutes of football, he can destroy
yes.
anyone. And I think that gives them an extra potency. That, yeah, I think City PSG, and I think City wins again.
All right. So what we probably took two steps. What do you think the semifinals will be?
Oh, well, City Arsenal and Atleti PSG.
Okay.
I think that's how I see this. Which would be, I mean, good for the coefficient. I mean, the coefficient ultras assemble. We do need both English teams to go through. Listen, this stuff matters. We're going to briefly touch on the Europa League draw, and it was not a good draw for the English teams. It was very much a suboptimal draw. Just as this,
are we
was,
moving on? Is that
yeah,
what you're
yeah? Yeah. Okay. Just as this wasn't a great draw, really, for the English teams. But West Ham being drawn against Bayer Leverkusen, and then Liverpool ending up on the other side of the bracket against Atalanta, it sets us up beautifully for the dream Liverpool versus Leverkusen final, which it is one of those things. These are clearly the best two teams in the competition, so you kind of want them to end up in the final. It has obviously the very potent narratives of Xavi Alonso and his future, which could still be at Liverpool. But it is Moisey. It's David Moyes that's standing between us and the dream final in this tournament that everyone kind of wants. Will Moyes poop our party?
I think that's very funny. I didn't even think about that somehow David Moyes could spoil
our
dreams.
First thing I thought about. I've got Moyes on the brain at the moment. He's in there, I mean, living rent-free.
I'm happy for all my Hammers fans that they've made it this far, Hammers fans' friends that they've made it this far, but I do not see a result where they get past Leverkusen.
I don't know. That I haven't been able to figure out West Ham all season, because they hardly ever play well, but they have... They've turned into like a mini Man United. I mean, United aren't that much of a low block team.
Good Lord.
But they have that thing of you rarely watch them and think this is a team that's playing well. But they have individual players up front that can win you a game in the blink of an eye. You know, a through ball from Paqueta, a dribble by Kudus, you know, Bowen scampering around and pouncing on something. Like, that front line will always get something out of a game. And then you add the fact that they're dangerous on set pieces. And that's gotten them out of trouble so many times in games where they're just across the 90 minutes, just kind of bad. And I think that's why West Ham fans, a lot of them, feel this sort of insane cognitive dissonance of like, wow, we're in the top half of the table and we've gone far in Europe, but like the team seems really bad and I'm not sure I really like David Moyes. So it's such a complicated situation. And you always wonder if, I mean, yeah, you look at it this way. I know this isn't how it works, but Leverkusen had trouble against Karabag.
Yeah.
Whereas West Ham kind of spanked Freiburg in the end. So, yeah. No, I don't think they'll do it, but it is what it is. I think we'll get the Liverpool-Leverkusen dream final that we were all... the dream final that we were all dreaming of. That's tremendous broadcasting. Well done, Lars. And just very... We're going to dwell on the Europa League, but we will note that Villa got Lille in the Europa Conference League.
Wait, you've moved on again.
Hold yeah. On. Yeah.
Okay.
So you need to go
can't
to
keep
the
up with you.
Need to go to the Lars Everton School of looking up things very quickly whilst
recording.
No, I'm
just used to driving and I'm not used to being the passenger, so yeah. I'm slow on the uptake. Sorry.
Well, it's a good sort of compensatory message after you've been driving me around Dallas all this time and showing me things. I'm the driver now, as they say in the film. Villa drawing Lille. Probably the toughest draw, I'd say, because Olympiacos and Fenerbahce are like tricky away games to go to, but I don't know, you just probably spank them at home and it's probably fine, whereas Lille, you know, less so, but Villa, I would still make Villa the favorite to win this tournament. In a way that the English teams always should be. And I will report again, nothing against Villa fans having a grand European adventure. God bless you, have a great time. But I don't think this tournament is for the Premier League teams. I honestly think they shouldn't be allowed in.
That's my favorite Lars hot sports opinion.
You don't even go here. Like this is not. You can't sit with us.
Don't. You get no slots.
Yeah, or something like, or just do something weird, like have. I don't know what that would be. Like the team that...
You start the tie minus one goal?
No, or like bring someone from the championship into this competition. No. I don't know. It's just because the whole point of it is... I don't need to do the whole rant again. The whole point of this competition is that it's a chance for the less financially potent leagues to have a European adventure. And for them to just constantly get like bowled over by a wealthy team from England and then winning it almost every year, which I think is what will happen. That just seems a bit silly.
Who are... The conference, there's been two editions of the conference, and Roma won it once.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Tottenham hang their head in shame. Tottenham were the English team that managed to get themselves knocked out.
And West Ham won it the other time.
Yeah. But that's the caveat when I keep saying the English team will always win this. Tottenham did manage not to. God bless them.
Well, we'll see how, if we go through three of them and English clubs win two of the three, maybe you're on to something. But if Aston Villa get knocked out by Lille or one of these other teams that they possibly may end up having to play, maybe that'll justify it. Maybe that's part of the fun is watching super wealthy English clubs get knocked out.
If they ever do, yeah. You got to give Tottenham some credit here. They did manage to like go out early in the Conference League, and before that, they were dumped out of the Europa League by a team whose manager was in prison, which is like... And just as far as banter goes...
Did he have like a burner phone in his cell that he was providing, that he was watching the game and sending instructions?
I feel like Mourinho kind of got off lightly there. Like, his aura still seems to be intact, and he seems to be sort of vaguely respected in some parts of the footballing world. He did manage to get dumped out of the Europa League with Tottenham, who for all their problems are a wealthy English club, against Dinamo Zagreb, whose coach was in actual prison. That's pretty bad, Jose. That's pretty embarrassing.
There's a whole joke in there about the coach of the opponent being in prison and being delivered a burner phone inside a condom.
Sure.
That was delivered. Never mind.
That I might edit out.
You probably should edit that out. I'm going to strongly advise you.
Maybe I should make a compilation of the times Peter suggested I edit something out in this episode.
This is way too much fun having you actually in the room doing this. So yeah. I'm a little, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
I'm ruining your podcast.
Giddy. You're supposed to be the experienced one. And you're giddy.
I'm just having fun. I'm sorry. Okay. The Betson people are going to call you.
Well, since I'm really basking. So it's not going to be the longest episode. We're just something light for the weekend.
Sure.
Since I'm thinking of things I can do, since I actually have a guest here with me that I normally can't do, and again, massively turning the tables on what is our usual dynamic, Peter.
This is not a good idea.
I'm going to present Peter with a quiz. Not like a general knowledge quiz, but I've been playing around on the FBref website, the stats place, because I'm on holiday, and this is the kind of stuff I get up to when I'm on holiday. I look at even more stats. And I thought it would be funny to just ask Peter and make him guess. And it'll be informative because we will learn the answers and everyone will learn something.
I'll look like a jackass.
Quizzes are good. Various stats, like who's doing well at various things in the Premier League this season. And I'm going to start us off with the most through balls. Which player, and I've got the top three here, so you'll get points and
this is
and
exclusive
kudos.
To the Premier League.
Yeah.
And so, which not Premier the club, League, but the player.
Yeah, which Premier League player has played the most through balls this season? And don't worry, if you spend too long time thinking,
it's one
I'll
of two. Can I
down.
Can I guess two? Just
yeah, of
can
course.
I, is it either A, James Maddison, or B, Bruno Fernandes?
Oh, yeah, you got one in the top three. Very good. Bruno is a second on this list.
Okay. Madison was out for too long of a time to probably.
Yeah, because this is not per 90. This is all in.
And it's not De Bruyne because he hasn't played enough
exactly
to qualify.
Right. Very good.
I'm
not going to force you to get all three, but it'd be good if I believe you can get one more. I have faith in you. And then the third one you're not going to get.
Is it Odegaard?
Yes, it is. Martin Odegaard, the most through balls in the Premier League this season. Very good, Peter Welpton. The third
I'm fist
one,
pumping, y'all.
I fully wrote off your ability to get the third one. Third one is Lucas Paquetá.
That, you know, actually, that does kind of make sense.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Because he's like kind of the guy who does things for West Ham. But he's also missed some games. But it's kind of weird. Again, West Ham weirdness, given how little possession they have. That wanted, but it just shows like Paquetá is such a good player, and you can totally see why City wanted him. Anyway, moving on. The most crosses. This one is really interesting. The most crosses. I think if you play FPL, you probably know the answer to this. If you don't, and you don't, you probably won't get it. But let's see. The most crosses.
Well, I was really shitty at it season after season. That's why I stopped playing it.
Doesn't stop me.
Most crosses. Is that going to be?
I'd bat you to get one out of three here. I believe in you.
Hold on. It's. Is it somebody from Everton?
That's too much hinting. But just for future references, we won't do those kinds of questions. But I will say no.
I'm going to be this is totally unfair on my part because I'm never going to guess a name. I just it almost certainly has to be somebody in the lower half of the table.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Is it who is the left-sided player for Luton? Doughty?
Oh my God, Peter, that is correct. Is Alfie Doughty.
Whoa!
I mean, that's genuinely impressive. I did not think you were going to get there.
Like,
the FPL crowd knows this because he's a defender, he's dirt cheap, and he gets you assists. But, you know, yeah, by a mile, Alfie Doughty has put in 253 crosses this season.
I'm doing that striker goal celebration where I turn my back to the crowd and hold my name on my jersey.
Rightly so, Peter. That is impressive. So runner-up is Kieran Trippier with 204. So he's Doughty is 50 crosses ahead of number two on this list.
I'm going to go fake Snort Corcane off the end line.
Why fake? And then there's this best...
it's not actual cocaine.
Number three is Pascal Gross, actually, who's tied with Bruno Fernandes at 170. Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, well, of course. That's
playing
all...
Hollywood balls in every direction. Yes. Obviously.
God, most frustrating thing ever.
Which player in the Premier League has put in the most tackles? Not the most tackles won, I should stress. It's actually two different answers. But who has tackled the most times?
Is it Casado?
No, though he was pretty high on the ranking, but he's not right at the top.
Okay, hold on. Is it Douglas Luiz?
It's not Doug Luiz. I believe in you. I think you
just
will
call
get
him
this.
Doug. Do you know him? So
I don't
well?
Know
you
why
just...
I call him Doug Luiz. That's crept in from another podcast.
Who is the goalkeeper we kept calling by his first name? Chuck.
Bob Sanchez.
Bob Sanchez.
I think both of those are from the FML FPL podcast. Those guys are really good at coming up with fun nicknames.
Like very American sounding.
No, they are Americans. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I love those guys. They're great at coming up with nicknames. Yeah, Bob Sanchez and Doug Luiz.
Okay, so wait, it's not Doug.
No,
it's
not definitely not Bob.
It's not Casemiro.
No, because he can't get around fast enough to chase anybody. Too slow. He'd love to be top of the list,
and he hasn't played enough, so it's not Cabby.
No.
I'm
surprised you haven't. I believe in you.
This is going to be the one where I'm like somehow I pulled Doughty out of my butt.
I know.
And who's, got that right, and I'm going to miss the most obvious one.
Who's the Premier League tackle monster, bar none?
Oh, yeah, Paulinho.
Yes, it is.
Yes, duh.
It
see?
Is Raul Paulinho.
Yes,
but interestingly,
I should have known that.
Yeah, he's got Vinicius Souza of Sheffield United hot on his tail.
Really?
With just one fewer tackle right now. So Raul Paulinho has got 106, Vinicius Souza 105. And Vinicius Souza has actually won more than Raul Paulinho. So in the sort of complete dumpster fire that is Sheffield United this season, maybe when they go down, the sort of lower half of the table clubs in the Premier League, take an extra look at Vinicius Souza. He seems to be gobbling up a lot of things in that midfield.
Not sandwiches.
No. And also, most dribble... This is very related, so we'll just do it very quickly. Most dribblers tackled is also Raul Paulinho. Like, people... Actually, not just tackling, but people trying to get past you, and you tackle them.
Are you going to ask me who has completed the most dribbles?
Yeah, we'll get there.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I was just going to say, Raul Paulinho is so far ahead of this, it's kind of funny. He's tackled 70 dribblers, whereas the runner-up is Pedro Porro on 46, and Jedi Robinson at 44.
Telling you, man.
Yeah,
he's going to get purchased by somebody.
Possibly. But the most blocks, who has blocked the most things in the league? I got three names here, the top three.
Oh, Harry Maguire has to be one of them.
He is not. I think United...
They've got to be the top... Do they as a club have the most blocks?
I don't have time to look that up. But okay. Yeah.
They're giving up shots like, you know, a cheap bar. most blocks.
That's very good. I'm going to steal that.
Giving
up shots like a cheap bar. Like a nightclub in Magaluf.
It's got to be one of the teams down there with United that just have given up so many shots, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So is it somebody on Sheffield?
It is actually not. I mean, maybe, ideally it should have been, but because they again can't get there. Okay, so
it's not
two of the top three are like, look, I'm hinting now, but very old school British-style defenders.
Not Dunk?
Not Dunk. Brighton have the ball too much.
The big lunk guy, Byrne.
Dan Byrne, again, I think Newcastle, he's out wide.
But...
But your head's in the right place.
It's not Maguire, it's not him, it's, hold on, this is going to come to me.
Yeah, I'm going to shorten...
I'm not looking this up, I'm legitimately sorting through teams and trying to think.
I'm going to shorten the thinking time, so the listener
you
at home...
keep doing this thing where you keep turning your laptop away from me.
Yeah, like because gonna, I think like you're, gonna, you know, maybe...
Is it Romero?
It's not Romero. I think Tottenham don't end up getting a lot of blocks because they're either like in possession or being countered on. Yeah, either they have the ball and they're miles off the field or they're being countered against. So they're really not in a position to block that many things.
It's not somebody.
Though I actually think Pedro Porro is pretty far up.
It's not somebody from Palace, is it?
No. You're going to be really annoyed when I tell you because I think you
it's going to be like the Paulinho one.
You could and should have gotten there.
Give me one more opportunity to come up with the name.
And it is someone who has featured in this category many times in his career. It's really an
yes,
old
it's
hand.
It's gonna
at
like people
things.
Are listening to this pounding
for
their
the last
dash,
decade. Going, this man has blocked so many things.
Ignoramus.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously Mr. Hold on, I'm getting there.
Okay,
I don't know.
Okay. It is James Tarkowski.
Oh,
of course
okay.
It is.
Yeah.
Who used to be the blocker in chief at Burnley,
yes.
Now the blocker in chief under Sean Dyche at Everton. And actually, the runner up in the blocking game is Craig Dawson. Because, of course, it is. But then the weird one is the guy with the third most blocks in the Premier League. I'm not even going to ask you to guess because everyone at home, you will not get this. It's Alexis McAllister.
What?
Very weirdly, Alexis McAllister has blocked a ton of shots for Liverpool.
That is strange.
Because he spent quite a lot of time playing.
Would you have ever guessed that?
No, not okay. Good God, no. But I guess it's because he's played as number six, and he's kind of had to get in the way of things.
Will you do me a favor?
Hmm?
Will you edit out some of the dead air while I was pondering that, just so it sounds like
I think
I didn't
I've
give
said
myself
like
a
three
lot of time
times that I'm definitely okay. I'm going to edit out the dead air. I'm not going to edit out that you asked.
Oh.
That's how we're going to do that. Lars giveth and Lars taketh away. We're moving on to the successful take-ons.
Will he edit out the condom joke? I don't know.
I think I will, but again, I won't edit out that. successful take-ons. Basically, the dribble stats. Players who have gone past people the most this season. Who has had the most successful take-ons in the Premier
Doku.
League? Number two is Jeremy Doku.
Mm.
Number one, kind of surprising. I don't think you'll get there, but you've got Jeremy Doku. One out of three, I'm happy with, generally speaking.
Matoma?
No.
No, he's been hurt too much.
I don't think you'll get there, so I'm just going to say it's Mohamed Kudus for West Ham.
Oh.
Which, again, he's a very dribbly boy. West Ham counterattack a lot.
Yeah,
it makes sense. And, again, Luton featuring here. Chidozie Ogbene, the Irish-Nigerian flying winger, former Cork City man.
What's the difference in numbers between Kudu and Doku?
Kudu's is at 75 successful take-ons. Doku is at 64.
Wow, that's a pretty big gap.
And Ogbene is bowed down at 54.
Okay.
So Kudus being 20 dribbles ahead of the guy who's number three on the list there. So he's the dribbliest of the dribbly boy.
God, I hope you ask me who has the most failed dribble attempts.
Damn, I should have looked that up, actually. That would have been funny.
Well, I can
the
tell
guy
you
who keeps trying to do it.
Absolutely Marcus Rashford.
Could be. It might actually be one of the ones who are quite prolific, because the ones who do it often, they get to try often without their managers killing them. I'm going to do the last one, which is aerial duels won across the season.
Soicek,
no. I think it's tricky for a midfielder to do well in this one, because the ball kind of...
I feel like he's winning on corners.
Yeah.
Both for and against, and I just feel like that guy wins everything.
I will reveal
air.
In the top three, there's two central defenders and a striker.
Well, that makes sense.
Two central defenders and a striker.
It's not Haaland, is it?
No.
Okay. I didn't think so.
City don't play it in the air enough.
Yeah, no.
I mean, if you played for Everton, maybe.
I thought maybe you were just throwing a little, book promotion.
Mm.
Thinking in your
we got a tweet saying there's too much Haaland chat, which maybe there is, but this
look,
is
dude, he's got a book to
this
sell.
This is, and also,
chill out.
One of the best strikers in the world is a kid from my hometown.
There
will be Haaland chat. There's just no way around that.
He's got a paperback to push.
Not yet. Well,
well it's coming.
The German edition on its way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait. That's
the Romanian edition will come sometime. Many languages. Exciting times.
Okay. Two center backs and a striker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna say the center back should be obvious. Is Romero one of them?
He is not. Again, I think I just don't think because of the way Tottenham play. He's not in a position to not that much aerial stuff comes against him.
I'm not smartly thinking about this.
Though one of them is a bit of a... the way Tottenham play, they either attack or they're running backwards.
Look, I established my credibility here.
You've done very well. You're playing with house money.
Okay, all right.
I think everyone will agree Peter has done better than expected on this quiz.
Hey, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah, this is the thing that happens to me a lot when I give compliments and they end up sounding snarky.
Look, the stupid American. Let's see.
Your words, Peter.
He calls it soccer.
Ironically, I'm the one who tends to call it soccer on your show to show my willingness to sort of meet
nobody,
the listeners halfway.
Nobody who I care about cares if you call it football, soccer, football, whatever.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so back to the question.
Mm-hmm. Most aerials won.
Most
aerials. I believe you can get one out of the three. I got faith in you.
Is it... No, it's not for rain.
You're so frustrated with United, you keep like thinking these kind of bad categories. Yeah. Like this must be.
Spends the most time trying to hurriedly in emergency get the ball out of their own box?
Yeah,
I'm so lost. Lars. I don't know. Okay, I'm still living in the glow of picking.
No, you've done well. I'll put you out of your misery. The one who's won the most aerial duels is Virgil van Dijk.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of, it tells you, first of all, what a monster season he's having. Also a little bit surprising, because I don't typically think the team that has been top of the league quite a lot will often have the defenders won the most aerial duels, because usually a team that's way up there will control the game more. But it has been the thing. I mean, we've been criticized as well for not talking about Liverpool more.
It's not Zuma or the Moroccan sent the other.
No, but that's good thinking.
Okay,
that's the good way of thinking. And I can just whilst you're
on,
thinking.
No, don't. No, now just, I'm now I'm
just
mad.
Point out that it is one of the fascinating things about Liverpool this season.
That is crazy. I would have not. I mean, I know he wins a lot of aerial duels, and more than his, more times than not, but I would not have guessed he'd top the list.
Yeah, and McAllister featuring in the blocking game and him winning the most aerials kind of suggests to you that Liverpool haven't controlled games in the way you expect a title challenger to do. It's one of the reasons they've been so much fun to watch, because they're not really capable of fully running a game and shutting down the opponent.
It's not
but
Ben
they've
Mee,
just got
is it?
So much firepower up front. They just kind of keep getting away with it, and it's now I'm a big fan of it.
Not Ben Mee, is it?
It's not Ben Mee.
Me.
So since we're close to me just saying who it is, right. I will spoil the fun by saying he has been mentioned already. Number three has been mentioned already in this quiz.
As a guess or just...
As one of the answers.
Oh, the center back or a striker?
Well, that would almost be telling, because we haven't mentioned that many center backs. Well, actually, we haven't mentioned that many strikers either, so I kind of feel like you should get it now.
Well, now I'm panicking.
Okay, I'm going to say it. It's James Tarkowski.
Oh, crap.
He's number three on the list.
Man.
He's got the most blocks and the third most aerial duels won in the league this season.
He's my nemesis.
James Tarkowski is quietly having a pretty huge season for Everton.
I apologize.
And number two on the list is actually DCL. It's Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
How is that possible?
Has won the second most headers in the Premier League this
season. I get that Everton's really big into crossing the ball, but has he played in...
It's really strange. But it goes to the fact, something we've spoken about a bit with Everton. The system is working. Like, the Dyche ball is actually... Everton are playing pretty old-school Dyche ball, and it's actually... They're just not kicking the ball into the goal. They're doing everything else correctly.
I'm torn over my appearance and my performance.
No. Don't let that get you down. Getting doughty, I think. I think, listeners, tweet to Peter and tell him how impressed we are with him getting doughty. The quiz
Pat
kinda,
the yank on his little head. Ruffle his hair.
Exactly
tell him how
right.
awesome he is.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, I was going to. The quiz kind of dragged out and took longer than I wanted to. I was going to do...
That's my fault.
I was going to ask or just bring up something that I have called Goalie Wars. It is, of course, not Goalie Wars. If you're not familiar with Goalie Wars, it's an amazing event at the MLS All-Star Game, which... can you describe Goalie Wars to people, Peter?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, I assume people... I played Goalie Wars as a kid.
No, I don't think we did.
Really?
No.
Because maybe that's an American thing. So what you do is you put two goals within, it varies depending on what it is. I think in the MLS All-Star Skills Competition, I think they're 20 yards away from each other, 25 yards apart.
Mm.
There's a stripe down the middle, and essentially goalie versus goalie just trying to get the ball into the other dude's net.
Yeah.
And it's at a very fast pace. And
you can throw, you can kick.
You can throw, you can kick, you can punt it, you can whatever you got to do, but you can't cross
midfield
to do it.
What's the difference between kicking and punting?
Punting's throwing the ball up out of your hand and kicking it.
Kicking it is
off the ground.
Oh, I get it.
Or in a volley stick. And
I would say, like, when Todd Boehly
is punting an American term that doesn't translate?
Maybe it's a rugby thing. I wouldn't know. People are going to be annoyed with me.
Okay.
But, like, when Todd Boehly went, like, why isn't there an All-Star game? Everyone went, oh, God, Todd, just go away. But it did occur to me, not going to lie, I would pay good money to watch Ederson versus Alisson in goalie wars. I think that would be incredible entertainment.
If you have never watched MLS All-Star Weekend, there is a circus element to it that I do believe, strongly believe, that if the Premier League was in some weird way, you could snap your fingers and make an All-Star Weekend of the Premier League.
Mm.
Some of those skills events would be an absolute blast to watch.
I agree. And put it indoors somewhere. Have it like at the O2 Center
or
something.
Have you seen the, like,
not in the big stadium, but have it like in...
Yeah. Do it someplace like that. Have you seen the skee ball version?
When Kai Havertz got trolled for missing. That was the one he won. It was the volley he couldn't do.
Yes, it's the one where you're trying to kick the ball into essentially buckets.
Yeah.
Except it's a giant wall with a bunch of buckets
of
different places. And yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so, and dear listener, this is what happens when I'm trying to take the wheel. Instead of just explaining, I want to look at which goalkeepers have done well this season. We spent like 15 minutes explaining goalie wars and the MLS skill competition. This is kind of thing. I believe I can log into like my podcast provider and see like when people start switching off.
Yeah, that's right.
I have a feeling this time spent listening. Yeah, this was the time people really started switching off en masse. I just kind of wanted to finish off our little quiz, from which I think we all learned a lot of things, by just having a quick gander at which goalkeepers have been doing well this season. Because there is a way of measuring this, which is
What is the metric?
It is.
It's one of those.
It's basically post shot expected goals per shot on target minus. You know, it is one of those. It's taking the XG value of the shots on target and kind of subtracting the goals that go in, and you can kind of find out if it's nerd speak for like, has this goalkeeper saved difficult shots or not? Is kind of what it is, and you can have a positive or a negative balance here, and I think. It's always interesting. It's not a definite science, but the ones near the top of the list are usually the ones who've done well, and the ones near the bottom are always the ones who haven't. Now, I'm intrigued.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can you compare the list of the metric that you're looking at to keepers with the most clean sheets, and are they similar?
I don't think you should, because I think the clean sheet is so dependent on what your defense is doing.
Okay.
I think the whole point of this metric is to get away from like
it's more specific to the keeper itself versus the actual shots you're facing
and how you're dealing with them, which makes it so much more interesting than clean sheets, I think. Now, interestingly, leading the way in this is a goalkeeper who has been surprisingly high in it before, and I'm starting to think that maybe this guy is just better than a lot of people think he is, and he gets credit for.
It's Onana.
No, though Onana is high. It's Jose Sa of Wolves.
Oh.
And it's actually not the first season he's super high on this list.
That doesn't actually surprise me.
I think Sa is one of those like sneakily good goalkeepers. And he's 31, so I don't think a big club's going to pick him up ever.
And he's at the top of the list?
He is currently the guy with the best sort of numbers in terms of...
What do you look stupid for relegating
him? I would absolutely not have called that at all. And second on this list is Guillermo Vicario of Tottenham, which is...
Boy, that's a surprise to me.
Is it really?
Well, do you remember my preseason... My preseason question was, what was going to happen first, a clean sheet for Tottenham or Richarlison was going to get his other side of his neck tattooed first?
Yeah, but the point here is that Tottenham are conceding so many big chances, and God bless Vicario, he's playing like a hero.
He's been fantastic.
And this is why this metric is better than the clean sheets, right? Because this basically deals with all the stuff that's been thrown at him, and he's done very well. Number third, very surprisingly, is actually Martin Dubravka, because during this period where Newcastle have been bad...
Yeah.
He's been conceding a ton of goals, but that's just because, again, as we've spoken about at length on this pod, the Newcastle defense has been so bad. He's actually done okay at the back to Dubravka. It's just he's getting no protection. And then number four is Areola for West Ham, who I think we've all seen has had a good season. And number five on this list is Andre Onana. So he is definitely in the top sort of echelon of Premier League goalkeepers.
Yeah, I would say if you were to take Onana and split that number up based on the second half so far of the season, he'd rocket up that list. I think what's weighting him down is the early part of the season where he was just howler after howler.
Blames. I forget who it was. May have been Barney Roney, who said he played like a hologram or something. It was very mean sort of...
Hologram Onana.
Yeah. It's not ideal. But just very briefly, bottom of this, the goalkeepers who have been doing the worst, according to this metric, is actually poor old Petrovic of Chelsea. Which is one of Chelsea, of course, famously underperforming their XG by a lot this season because they can't finish. Turns out their goalkeeper is also having a stinker. Maybe they need to get Bob Sanchez back. And then the second worst is Matt Turner, unfortunately, of Nottingham Forest. Boy.
Petrovic, by the way, a guy they got from an MLS team.
Yeah, so it's double MLS Revolution. At the bottom of this league, which is kind of a blow. I mean, historically, goalkeepers from the U.S. tend to be quite good.
Yeah. But, well, yeah. Petrovic isn't an American. He just came from MLS.
Yeah.
Matt Turner is absolutely number one, number two on the national team.
Yeah, which is, this is the second
worst.
Doesn't
bode well.
Not at all. And then Sam Johnstone of Crystal Palace has also had a bit of a stinker. Mark Flecken of Brentford, also bad. You kind of expect Brentford with all their analytics guys to try to find a goalkeeper. But Flecken to replace Raya is one of the reasons why Brentford have been so struggling so much for so much of this season. Anyway, that was goalie wars with sort of XG nonsense. I thought that was interesting, and I think definitely my ambition of making a quick and breezy episode has fallen into the dust. And this has been one of the least focused episodes of The Last Resort.
Yeah, but you know what? For the listener, it's like ASMR.
Is it?
Football pod.
Hoping so.
Our two sexy voices.
Hoping so. Well, one sexy voice. My voice has gone up an octave as this has gone by. I've gone a little bit like, oh, where's it going? But definitely editing that out.
That's not fair.
Anyway, lastly, there is no betting column this week for reasons, but... like a lot of other people, I was setting up my free hit team on FPL this weekend because there's only four games and I had something like two guys playing. I haven't planned for this, so I'm going to have to play my free hit. I think half the game are playing their free hit, surely. There is a school of thought that you should just kind of take the hit and wait for a good double game week with that, but no, I'm free hitting this week. And what I discovered trying to do this, where are clean sheets coming from here? Like, we were trying to find some defenders who might feasibly get us a clean sheet this weekend, and
What did you just say?
A clean sheet.
I don't think that's what you said, Lars.
All right, when...
No, leave
is
that
this
in.
Is this another edit point? Should I bleep that, maybe?
I think the listener will enjoy that verbal fumble.
Oh, yeah. And I just reached the conclusion that I don't think we'll have any clean sheets this weekend. Because, okay, the danger one is Burnley Brentford. Because Burnley, as we know, are the worst attacking team in the league. That's certainly at home they are. I think they are overall as well. They're the worst home team in the league, and they're just real bad. But Brentford have just quietly been a bit garbage at the back. They've got one clean sheet in the last 20. So you'd think at home against a team that's kept one clean sheet in the last 20, Burnley will get a goal from somewhere, like the Fofana running away from people or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And Brentford with Ivan Toney versus this sort of kind of goofy Brentford defense. Like, I absolutely think that. So I think we'll get both teams to score there, even though that is the danger. Luton, Nottingham Forest. I mean, Luton were back at it this week in the Bournemouth game. We haven't even talked about that. But Luton being this sort of wacky, goal-tastic... I think we're on overtime already, but like, I looked up like the XG since the 1st of January... And Luton is actually like fourth or fifth in the Premier League for XG produced since the turn of the year. They're creating a ton of chances, but they've also conceded the most. They have changed strategy and just become this really goofy team. They're really throwing themselves forward now, Luton. I'm not sure that... I mean, bold strategy. Let's see how that works out for them. But yeah, I'm expecting goals here. Forest are bad, but actually... both teams to score has landed, I think, in 11 of the last 12 Luton games or something like that. So I think this should be fine. Fulham Spurs. Fulham are not a big both teams to score team, but of course Spurs really, really are. 79% of Tottenham games have gone both teams to score this season. They're joint top of that list along with, of course, Luton. And the last game of the weekend, West Ham Villa. West Ham, not an attacking team, but as we've spoken about, they have this weird thing of like often looking bad, but they have some really good attacking players who will get them a goal from somewhere. Will West Ham keep Villa out? I don't think so. I don't think they'll skunk Villa. Isn't that the thing? They'll skunk them. I don't think they will do that.
Okay. No, they won't skunk Villa, no. But I do think that game probably is interesting just because Villa will play so high. That'll play into West Ham's skill sets.
No, I completely agree.
Did you already say that?
No, I didn't. Oh, and sorry. I think the turntables have turned. You're the one looking up things on the computer whilst I'm...
I was just trying to let you do Lars things. I should have shut up. Sorry. I was trying to look up tours for the football stadium.
Ooh.
I'm going to take you to AT&T Stadium where the World Cup's going to get played. And I was hoping I could get you in on a tour, but it appears they're not doing them today. So.
That's very mean of them. Anyway,
edit that out.
I'll get there for the World Cup, Peter. Don't worry about that.
Yes, you will.
So my point is, going through these four games, and I'm hoping you're listening to this now, not tomorrow or Sunday, because it might already sound silly, but I think we'll get goals. Every single team will score this weekend. I don't think anyone will keep a clean sheet. So if you make a parlay in the local vernacular, if you make not a treble this time, a quadruple, with both teams to score in every single game, no clean sheets at all, Betson gets you a price of 5.42, so more than five times your stake for no clean sheets this weekend. And having spent some time setting up my FPL team and desperately trying to find defenders who might get me a clean sheet, I feel pretty good about that. I think there's real value in that one. I think we'll get a goal-tastic weekend for the games that are being played. Which I will watch in a goofy time zone. That'll be very confusing. Anyway, this has definitely gone on for long enough. Thanks for hanging out with me again, Peter.
Well, you're in my house. I kind of have to.
Yeah, there's that. And thanks for doing so well on the quiz.
I'm actually kind of semi-impressed.
Just on sort of happy moments so far this calendar year in the life of Peter Welpton, where does the Alfie Doughty thing rank?
Oh, it's absolutely top three.
Right up there.
Yes, yeah. 100%. That, and then the other thing that happened to me yesterday is I got my 4K Blu-ray disc of The Abyss finally I've been waiting for in the mail. So
excellent.
Nobody's going to understand that reference.
No, I think people know The Abyss.
I've been waiting for that to come out on 4K.
Peter's an AV geek. No, yeah, he's got. This is good. This is good.
Lars being here, getting to hang out with Lars, The Abyss on 4K disc, and me getting Alfie Doughty right on the quiz pretty much sums up what a kick-ass week this has been so far for me.
Doesn't it just? And hopefully some of that mirth has translated right into your ear canal, dear listener, and you will want to tune in again. Maybe we'll do one more episode while the resort is in Texas. We'll see how that goes. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye!
Just edit that part out. You probably should edit that out. I'm going to strongly advise you to edit. Will you, like, edit out some of the dead air? But will he edit out the condom joke? I'm fist pumping, y'all.
Definitely editing that out.
It's not fair.